Thank you, Debbie, and thank you very much, Senator Warner and Congressman, former Congressman LaTourette. Well, just 2 weeks away from the dreaded sequester. You've been focused, Senator Warner, on budgets and spending since you came to Congress, before that when you were governor of Virginia, leading your bipartisan gang of six in efforts to strike a deal. We've covered you on that lots of times. And despite a near-death experience with a fiscal cliff just weeks ago, there's still no deal on this new fiscal cliff with 2 weeks to go. So, Senator, first with you, what's the problem? What's going to happen to our area and elsewhere?
Well, first of all, Dave, it's great to be back here in the studio. I have fond memories of doing these kind of programs with when I did Ask the Governor, and really great to have former Congressman Steve LaTourette here. When we got a lot of focus about the so-called gang efforts during my time, there was an equal bipartisan effort led by Steve in the House, and I think he and I could sit down over the next hour and work this thing out. I think actually most of our listeners, if we all sat down for a couple hours, we could work this out. Let's again, for the listeners, let's remember how we got here. Back when there was that debacle in August of 2011 with the debt ceiling, at that moment in time, we made a certain amount of about $1 trillion going forward of discretionary cuts over a 10-year basis. At the same time, we said, that's really not enough. Let's go ahead and add another $1.2 trillion of automatic cuts that were in more kind of more sacred cows. I mean, some of the defense areas, some of the areas around Medicare and reimbursement for health care. But these cuts were set up to be so stupid and so indiscriminate that the expectation was a rational group of people would never allow them to come to pass. Well, we've now muffed this three times since then. The super committee failed. Our efforts and Steve's efforts, unfortunately, failed. We got a little bit of revenue on New Year's Eve, not enough to do a major deal. And again, I would point out that the Simpson-Bowles plan, the gangs plans, they had about $2 trillion, depending on the baseline, of additional revenue. So $600 billion. Good start, but not enough. So now we're facing 2 weeks out from cuts that I don't think the public will appreciate yet how bad they are. Let me just give three examples and throw it to Steve. Because people will say, well, you know, 6, 7, 8% cuts, everybody ought to be able to figure that out. Well, the way they set these up is it says every item of the federal government, regardless of whether it's working or not, gets cut an equal amount. So there's 975 separate line items just in the Navy budget. And, you know, the Navy flexes up in certain years when an aircraft carrier may be deployed. It may be back in dry dock getting fixed up. You know, the budget switches dramatically. They can't let the contract because of these cuts. So we'll have examples where these sequestration cuts will cost the taxpayer money because we will break contracts that will basically, you know, the government, just like any family, if you buy in bulk, if you buy five rolls of toilet paper or five tanks, you get a volume discount. If you've got to cut that back, you lose money. I know we're up to the eights. Let me just give two other quick examples. You know, you lay off meat inspectors one day a week, that's going to drive prices up in the grocery store. You end up cutting a NIH grant, 4 years of research, you can't let the fifth year, you flush the first 4 years of research. This is the worst way to go about cutting government.
Well, I'll have Congressman LaTourette add his two cents to this very, very expensive process in just a moment, Debbie. Yeah, Congressman LaTourette, former Congressman LaTourette. First question is, with all of the Sturm und Drang that we're talking about, Senator Warner has just outlined what's happening. Your former colleagues are taking next week off. It's President's Day break, and they're going. And the president himself is taking a long weekend. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, let me say I never thought I'd live long enough to be in the glass enclosed nerve center, so I'm very honored to be here. I'm also really happy to be with Senator Warner, and while we may have some minor disagreements on a couple of issues, the first time I met Senator Warner was at his house on the Go Big, Go Home, and he's right. If you locked us in a room, we'd fix this thing in about an hour, and he's not the problem. Vacations, listen, I served 18 years in the House, and I think, sadly, it's a media-drummed-up thing. You're never on vacation when you're a member of the House. You're never on vacation when you're a United States senator. And you're never on vacation when you're the president of the United States. And, you know, luckily they've invented things like the telephone and fax machines and the internet. And these negotiations, I mean, the senator knows better than I that these aren't made by 535 people. God, if they were, we'd be in worse shape than we are. This is going to be a deal, if there is a deal, it's brokered by the President of the United States, the leader of the Senate, and the leader of the House.
Well, Congressman LaTourette, beyond that, within your party caucus and your former colleagues, you've got a Tea Party contingent. And they're blamed for standing in the way of a deal and hampering Speaker Boehner's ability to lead his troops out of the sequester madness. What do you make of that?
Well, I think I would back up a little bit from where Senator Warner was a little earlier, and I would refer your listeners. There was a great special Frontline on PBS this past week that I thought did a great job of laying out what happened a year ago, August. I would also direct your listeners to Bob Woodward's excellent book, The Price of Politics, and I don't get any money for promoting his book, but he very clearly, if you go back to the debt limit business, Republicans, John Boehner really went out on a limb by putting $800 billion of revenue on the table with the president. And the Sunday before everything, the wheels came off, they had a deal. And they clearly had a deal. Now, inadvertently, in the category of unintended consequences, when the rejuvenated Gang of Six came out with their plan that had more revenues than the deal the president had struck, he then asked for $400 billion more. And sequestration, for all the blame that the House is getting, was actually Jack Lew's idea, who went back to Graham Rudman and said this should be the trigger. But it was designed. Boehner came to our conference and said, this is so disgusting, this is so horrible, that we don't want to let it happen. And so the Tea Party Republicans in the House, to their credit, do believe that the tax increases always come and the spending reductions, particularly on the entitlement side, never do. This thing could be solved tomorrow if the president and the speaker went back to where they were in August 2011. This thing would go away.
Well, right now, Senator Warner, starting out with you, the Democrats' plan generally is targeted cuts and taxing the wealthy, in a sense. What do you make of that? But the Republicans say, former Congressman LaTourette's side says no, only cuts.
I think that it's important to remember kind of where we are. We've had... And the president said in the State of the Union the other night that we've done about $2.5 trillion of debt reduction. I think that's a little high, but whether it's 2.2, 2.5, we're in that range. And it has been about $1.5 trillion in cuts and about $600 billion in revenue. You know, we're going to need that ratio or more, I mean, to kind of finish this out. We need another roughly $2 trillion. I think there's been plenty of blame to go around both sides, how we got here. But the notion is we're going to have to, my Republican colleagues are going to have to realize we're going to have to put revenues on the table. My Democratic colleagues, and let me assure you there's some on the Democratic side that don't want to touch entitlements at all. They got to be reformed, not because Social Security and Medicare aren't great programs, just because the math doesn't work anymore. And even in areas like defense, we are going to need to make some additional cuts. But there is a smart way and a stupid way to make cuts. If you give any manager a budget number to cut, give them some flexibility, give them some time to phase in these cuts, any good manager, any good executive can, worth their salt, can get there. But this kind of arbitrary, across-the-board, non-discriminatory approach, again, I mentioned there are 975 separate line items in the Navy budget. All 975 of those programs do not provide equal value to the taxpayer or equal need to defend our nation. You got to give some flexibility if you're going to hit this. So we're going to need a compromise.
But Congressman LaTourette, your side says even cutting tax benefits, loopholes, which is brings in revenue, that's a no-no this time around. They don't want to go that way either.
Well, that's not accurate. They're not a big fan of the Senate bill, which is another bad idea. Replacing a bad idea is really what the Senate proposal is. I will tell you, there are enough Republican votes. You're not going to get the most conservative in the House, but there are enough Republican votes. If they went back to the model that the Speaker had worked with the President on a year ago, August, that had $800 billion of revenue through cleaning out the underbrush and economic growth and everything else, with a realistic plan forward on how to deal with the entitlements, you'd get enough votes on the Republican side to get 218 votes. And I think the encouraging thing is when Jim Cooper of Tennessee, Democrat, and I put Simpson Bowles on the floor during the Ryan budget discussion, We got a robust 38 out of 435. So those of you at home keeping score, that's not a not a winning number.
Yeah.
When it was done this past week on the budget bill that was going through the House, it was up to 75. And the other encouraging thing about that is both Steny Hoyer, the whip, the Democratic whip, and Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, both voted for it.
Yeah, and of course the Democrats, and this is a no-no for Republicans too, from what my reporting tells me, they want the Warren Buffett rule. They want higher taxes on wealthy folks, and that seems to be a problem too.
Well, I think you're going to, I believe in a progressive tax system. I've been lucky enough to do real well in business. I think that's where a lot of the revenue can come from. But at the end of the day, if we're going to get the kind of revenues we need, and Steve and I may disagree on what that top line number is, but it's going to, at the end of the day, going to have to come from more than just the top 1%. There needs to be some sense that we're kind of all in this together, and in a progressive way. I mean, obviously, folks, middle class needs to be a much, much smaller number. But, the challenge we've got in our nation is we are at $16.5 trillion of debt. We add $3 billion a day to this. There is nothing that is going to self-correct. So my hope would be we could have a comprehensive approach. And candidly, if we get a real debt deal in place, I think that will do more for job growth than any specific program that either Governor Romney or President Obama put in place in the campaign.
We're going to come back after traffic and weather. And also Virginia Congressman Rob Whitman, Republican, joins us after this.
Yeah, and we're pleased to have with us now another member of the panel here, and that would be Virginia Republican Congressman Rob Whitman, member of the Armed Services Committee. Welcome aboard, Congressman.
Dave, it's great to be with you today. Deborah, thank you so much for having us.
We're pleased to have you here, and I would just continue the discussion by saying you're on Armed Services. You're worried about those military workers, those defense employees in your district and around the country. How bad is it going to be around here and for them if this sequester thing hits?
Well, this can be very significant. As we all know, the impacts are big, not just on Virginia, but also on our nation. And, my concern is not only for Virginia, but in the broader sense about how are we going to sustain our military in ways that are necessary to provide for the strategic dominance that this nation has around the world. That's really the bottom line with this. We know that it's going to impact the nation strategically. We know it's going to impact all states economically. It just has to be set aside. And I know yesterday the entire Virginia delegation sat down, Virginia congressional delegation, Senator Warner, Senator Kane, as well as all of our House members, and said, listen, we are focused and adamant that this sequester needs to be set aside. You know, it's the nation's interest that's at stake right here. Let's get this done. Let's find ways to make sure that this doesn't harm what we do as a nation. And then in turn, what it does to our military. And remember, too, there are thousands of Department of Defense civilian employees are going to be affected by this. All those great companies that provide support to our military, those men and women that work there, that intellectual capacity, unfortunately, gets affected by that, even potentially lost if people are laid off or if they are placed on furloughs. For some, that will say, hey, that's enough. I'm going to go elsewhere. I'm not going to be on this roller coaster ride anymore. So the implications of this are not just in the short term, but in the long term for this nation. And we heard much of those concerns yesterday as we met and talked to folks within the defense community that are concerned about this.
Yeah, let's take a question, Congressman and Senator. Here's David in Dumfries. David, you're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. This sequester that we've been hearing about for weeks and months and everything, it's kind of like getting a dead horse. Everybody's probably tired of it. Specifically, Governor, what sacrifices are you willing to take to make, maybe do your part to solution? Or specifically, are you and your constituents willing to take a complete pay cut for the remainder of your tenure as maybe a symbolic gesture or even a financial gesture to say, listen, I won't take any money or I'll take a dollar. You know what? I'm going to do my part. I'm not going to make any money just to do my part.
Well, Dave, one of the things that we put in place was because we haven't had a budget, if we don't get a budget by April 15th, members of Congress aren't going to get paid. That is symbolic. And, again, I'm luckier than many members because I had a successful business career first, so it's easier for me to acknowledge that. But I think it's important symbolically to say we don't do our job, we don't get paid. I think the bigger question here is what you ought to ask of all of us, are we willing to kind of get out of our red team, blue team kind of, you know, political foxholes and actually put the country first. There are rational ways to get this job done. I mean, when I was governor, I had a 2-to-1 Republican legislature. We got stuff done. We went from a deficit to a surplus. There are ways to find common ground, but you got to stop the kind of saying it's only the other guy's fault and acknowledge. I mean, Democrats got to do entitlement reforms. Republicans got to do more revenues. Even, and I agree with Rob Whitman about the hurt in defense, but defense cannot continue. It's going to have to be cut as well. I mean, one of the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mullen, said, biggest single threat to our country is not the terrorist. It is this $16.5 trillion debt that will crush our ability to stay competitive in the rest of the world. So I think what people are looking for is a little bit of shared sacrifice, a little bit of let's spread this around, everybody do their part. Too much of the debate now has been about, all right, you know, we're going to blame that guy or this guy, or only these folks are going to pay and these folks are going to get exempted. We're all going to have to give some.
Is there a chance that any of your staff members might be furloughed in any of these
There will be
cutbacks
on the absolutely on the congressional staffs as well.
Why don't we take another call now? Here is Bill. He's got a question. Bill from Vienna. What's on your mind, Bill?
I have a question for Senator Warner. Actually,
go ahead.
Governor Warner.
Go ahead.
I'm a Virginia resident.
Hey,
Governor Warner, you described quite accurately the line-by-line impact of the sequester. Why can't Congress change the sequester law to provide that agency heads would have the discretion within the overall agency line items to achieve the overall cut and not have to cut every single line item by the same amount, give them the discretion to achieve rational cuts rather than irrational cuts? Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Bill. I mean, I think, you know, my approach is you got plan A. Let's actually not just get rid of sequester for this year, but for the balance of the other 9 years, let's do it in a way that does revenues, does entitlements, does targeted cuts. Plan B, and I'm going to get, you know, grief from both sides on this, is, you know, as a former business guy who's had to make cuts, I was governor, made cuts. I think I made every Virginian in the whole state mad when I shut down the DMV one day a week. You know, I've taken that grief, but there are smarter, there are stupid and less stupid ways to make cuts. Let's, as at least plan B, give these agency heads the discretion. Congress is going to need to come back and bless that because appropriators guard that prerogative very strongly. But there is a way to do this in terms of discretion that I think would be a good plan B.
Break for traffic and weather here.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8th.
The cleanup from the morning accident continues on the outer loop of the Beltway. The crash is after Pennsylvania Avenue. Two left lanes remain blocked. Inner loop, purely rubbernecking delays near 202. Outer loop slows near Andrews. 95 southbound, painful through the midday. The work zone down at 212 blocks the right lane. Some sort of work going on eastbound out at the Bay Bridge. That blocks the right lane of 2. In Virginia, 95 southbound. Delays before the Occoquan. The work is after 123 today, blocking the right lane. Also work northbound on the HOV lanes right now, headed north of Dale City up to the Prince William Parkway, blocking the left lane. 66 eastbound remains slow inside the Beltway before Route 7. The work zone before Washington Boulevard blocks the left lane. Also very slow traffic on 50 eastbound after Centerville Road, headed towards Stringfellow Road and Majestic Lane with the construction in the right lane. Coming southbound out of the district in the 3rd Street Tunnel, the ramp to go westbound on the freeway, you'll find the left lane blocked off with the work zone headed toward Main Avenue. Outbound Canal Road before Foxhall, the left lane's blocked with work today. And southbound 16th Street at Monroe Street earlier, crane work had blocked two right lanes. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
Beautiful start to your Friday. Plenty of sunshine out there, but as we go into this afternoon, the clouds will be on the increase. Temperatures, though, still manage to make it into the mid-50s. Tonight, big changes on the way as the frontal system prepares to move through the area. Probably later on this evening, we will see a little bit of rain shower, maybe some wet snow coming through tonight into tomorrow. And we could even see a trace up to an inch, kind of the same thing that we dealt with yesterday morning, mainly that accumulation is going to really stay well north of the D.C. area. And then we get into Saturday, temperatures not getting out of the upper 30s. So enjoy today. We'll also see a wind, so it's going to feel like we are in the 20s for your Saturday. And with that wind, we could also see some passing snow showers. That goes for Sunday as well. Temperatures still on Sunday, not getting out of the upper 30s. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC 7's meteorologist, Lauren Ricketts.
Sunshine, 43 degrees in Frederick, Maryland. We're looking also at 43 in Manassas. 51 degrees here in Northwest D.C. as we head to the mid-50s later today. Checking Wall Street for you, the Dow is up 4 points, NASDAQ up 2, and the S&P up 1. Back in a moment with more of Ask the Lawmakers.
Congressman LaTourette, as a lot of people are beginning to think, we're seeing the movie all over again we saw a month ago, that we'll go right up to the edge, go over the edge, hit the sequester for a little bit, and then maybe supporters of getting the sequester rid say, then we'll have sanity. How bad would that be? Would that give us a black eye, but nothing really serious, or what?
Well, I think it's a situation that's recoverable, and I have to, just reading the tea leaves, I think that's the direction that people are headed in. But I don't think that would be good. I don't think it would be good for the country. It wouldn't be good for the economy, particularly here in Northern Virginia. Because, you know, the whole problem with this process and the sort of the jerks and the starts and the emergencies and the cliffs is that real people have to plan their lives. If you're in business, you can't say, I'm going to do what I do this week, but not knowing what my taxes are going to be, the regulations are going to be, the health care costs are going to be. Nobody can plan. And so it's by its nature destructive to the economy. So it's not a good way to go. And secondly, it continues to send a message to the markets that these guys, this is the gang that can't shoot straight. And so why should we invest our dough in the United States if the United States government can't even conduct its own business?
Okay, thank you. Congressman Whitman, from your perspective, and personally, you're going to be affected by this. Your staff's going to be affected by this. We know that. What would you do? Would you personally give up your salary or give up a pay hike if this thing doesn't go through and until it goes through, not take a salary?
Well, Dave, I've been supportive of making sure that members of Congress take a cut in salary and that we set the example by reducing our budgets significantly, the administrative budgets there for members. I think we have to lead the way on this. I do think we have to lead by example. We're asking a lot of folks out there in the government sector. So I do believe that we need to lead in that, and not just not take a pay increase, but I think it has to go further than that. I think members of Congress have to take a pay reduction.
Here's another call for us. Here is Ben in the District of Columbia. Ben, your question?
Oh, yes. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I want to talk to the former governor and also the House of Representatives. My question is, would they consider term limits for congressmen and women? Because it looks like some been there too long and nothing gets done. Term limit will help?
All right,
well,
Senator
I'll take the
Warner.
First crack at that. back when I first ran and lost back in the 90s for Congress or Senate, I was for term limits. Then I saw the states that put them in place, a lot of Western states. California's had term limits for more than a decade. I'm not sure, as bad as things are here, that I want to model us after California. And I think you end up with term limits. You get folks in who candidly don't fully understand how this business operates. We're operating the largest enterprise of the world, the federal government. And I think the smartest term limits is an informed electorate. If we don't do our jobs, fire us. But I just don't think the arbitrary term limit thing works.
Congressman Whitman, we'll get to you first. What do you think about term limits?
Well, I think term limits for members aren't really where we need to have the focus. I think term limiting those folks in leadership positions to make sure folks rotate through those areas, that's really where the gatekeepers are in the system. And I think if you say, hey, listen, you can only serve 3 terms, and that's the current rule in the House, and make sure you rotate people through there, then you don't have this consolidation of power. You do have people that come in with new ideas, fresh ways of doing things, and you make sure, too, that people have a chance their turn at leadership. And I think that keeps the process going. It keeps it on its toes. It makes sure that you don't consolidate too much power in one place. And also, it doesn't give that element of seniority the importance that it would be if you didn't have that rotation in the leadership position. So I think really that's fundamentally where you can make the system work better by term limiting those folks in leadership positions.
Thank you. Congressman Lotterette, you term limited yourself. You quit.
I did. And first of all, Whitman, I'm glad you're here because Warner was eating my lunch. And so it's good to it's good we're ganging up on him. Well, now that I'm retired, I'm for term limits and I'm for Congress getting no pay at all. So but that's that's not realistic. And on the pay issue, you know, just the previous caller, when you limit pay, and I'm all for Congress sharing in the pain that everybody else is suffering with, but you're going to wind up with one or two people in the Congress, very, very rich people that don't need the paycheck, or people that don't have enough sense to get a decent paying job on a regular basis. And that's not who you want to govern the country. You want the country to look, the Congress to look like the country, and that includes some middle class people who actually need the paycheck. On term limits, I mean, even though Congress is not a popular organization, this is a job where you get good at your craft. And to Ben in the district, you know, Ben, if you had, God forbid, heart trouble and you went to the hospital, would you rather have the guy that had performed 1,000 operations or the pimply-faced kid that was just working his way through medical school?
Budget Showdown, Gun Control, Hagel and Brennan. Now, more of Ask the Lawmakers on WTOP. Here are Dave McConnell and Deborah Feinstein.
Welcome back. 20 minutes left in the show for you to give a call and talk to Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner, Ohio Republican Congressman Steve Lotterette, also Virginia Republican Congressman Whitman. Standing by on WTOP, we're at 877-336-1035. Again, 877-336-1035. And now to WTOP Capitol Hill correspondent Dave McConnell.
And we're going to move into gun control now. That's certainly a hot topic. The president has gone full blast on this, no pun intended. Sorry about that. The president really wants to do something about this, and yet Congress still seems split. Do you see any gun checks, maybe automatic weapons, assault weapons, so-called assault weapons, mental health issues coming in here, violent games? There's a whole panoply of things to talk about. What seems likely to come out of Congress at this point, Senator Warner?
I think it's to be determined. I think let me go into three or four batches here. First, I do think there's a couple of senators, Senator Manchin and others, who said, you know, we really need a comprehensive look at mass violence across the board, from you know, things we're exposed to on video games, television, society. Not that there's going to be some solution set there, but that has to be part of the debate. Second, and I say this as somebody who's a proud supporter of the Second Amendment, gotten great ratings from the NRA. But I believe after the tragedy at Newtown, and I know Deborah and others, many people's lives were touched by that. You know, when my three daughters came to me and said, "Dad, you work there. What do you, you know? What's the deal here?" And you know, status quo isn't working. I do think you know there should be a legitimate way to do background checks across the board. Now, obviously, you got to have exemptions that you know. Father wants to give a kid a shotgun. Somebody wants to come to my farm and shoot. I can lend him a gun. But there ought to be a way to do an effective background check system, which goes into a whole series of secondary issues around mental health issues that, quite honestly, even the existing system only gets those folks who have been already kind of adjudicated. Many of those folks, particularly where we look at some of the profiles of many of these shooters, kind of 15 to 25-year-old who've not maybe been fully into the system, how they at least get flagged in a way so that there's a secondary check. I think on the other end of the spectrum, you know, the notion of trying to draw a definition of what falls into an assault weapon or not based upon a pistol grip or a type, I am very skeptical that that is going to be really effective. So I do think there'll be movement on background checks. I do think there'll be movement on some overall look. I think there's some gray areas around magazine sizes that are problematic. But I hope that we can find at least a step forward. It won't be as far as some would like, but background checks, I think, would be an area that we can come together on. And if done effectively, and particularly if we can also hook in some of these mental health issues, I think can be somewhat of a deterrence. We're never going to stop all of these tragedies, but even if we can prevent a few, I think we could all rest easier.
Congressman Lotterette, a lot of people are concerned about the loopholes at gun shows. They think that that's a focus that ought to be more prominent in Congress.
Well, listen, I had an A rating for the entire 18 years I served in the United States Congress. But the senator's right. If you look at the five of the last six horrific tragedies, they've been committed by young white men in their late teens, early 20s, with untreated mental illness. So That is, if you don't get to that, it doesn't matter what you do with guns. But on the other side, as long as there isn't an overreach, I think Newtown did change the debate in Washington because there's nothing like seeing children suffer in any venue that affects everybody, including the most hardened members of Congress. And there was a really well-written piece by, going back to mental illness, by a woman that went viral, and she said, "I am Adam Lanza's mother," that really described her difficulty in getting mental health treatment for her son. And then just to the gun shows. I've been to gun shows. I'm sure that the senator's mm-hmm. been to gun shows. And what I mean by overreach is that some people that want the background checks at gun shows want there to be no gun shows. Because if you go to a gun show this weekend at the Dulles Center, and you say, "Okay, I'm going to buy a gun," and there's going to be a 5-day waiting period. Well, you're not going to. There is no gun show because 5 days from now they're going to be at the Cleveland IX Center. But again, like the sequester, there's a way forward. If I want to go buy a house, I get pre-approved by my bank. We could put in place a system where you get pre-approved background check to make sure that you don't have mental illness, you haven't been convicted of a crime, you don't look nutty. And then you present that to the gun show, you get your gun, you go home, and you're a law-abiding citizen.
Congressman Whitman, you're in a district that has a fair amount of people who probably own weapons and do hunting and things of that nature. What is it that, and they talk to you, I'm sure, what do they tell you about their concerns, if they have concerns about an assault on the amendment to the Constitution, an assault on the right to have a firearm? What's the thing that bothers them?
Well, you know, I think people are concerned across the board about gun violence, especially gun violence against our children. I know my wife, who's now taught school for 33 years, lets me know about that on a daily basis. So people do believe we need to address the issue of gun violence. What are the underlying causes? And you've heard that discussed here with both Congressman La Tourette and Senator Warner about looking at some of those underlying causes. I think, though, people are very concerned about an overreaction and saying, "Listen, you know, let's make sure that we don't, in any way, shape, or form, intrude upon the individual's right to bear arms." And I think that's critical with this. And I hear that from folks back home too. They are very, very concerned about an overreaction here. They are also very concerned about the violence associated with guns. But they want to make sure too that we aren't overreaching or overstepping here. So that's what I'm hearing from folks back home.
Thank you, Debbie. Well, Chuck Hagel, the former senator, Republican senator, his nomination for being defense secretary is held up. It's caught up in a filibuster, and Republicans say that they want to know more about where he gave speeches, his views on Iraq, Iran, and Israel. And they're also pushing to get more information on the Benghazi, the deadly Benghazi raid that the American ambassador was killed in. Senator Warner, what's it look like for Chuck Hagel?
Listen, I had some concerns, particularly about some of former Senator Hagel's comments about Israel, about I think we need to continue to show absolute strong support for most important ally in the Middle East, and concerns about making sure that we draw the line that Iran should not have access to nuclear weapons. I think that I wish Senator Hagel had been a bit clearer in his hearing, but end of the day, I think this did not rise, and I think he has clarified some of his earlier statements to the point that the president shouldn't have his choice as Secretary of Defense. And you know, I've not been in the Senate a long time, but I do hear folks saying that this is the first time somebody has been filibustered. It is a reflection, I think, of the institution not working the way it's supposed to be. If you don't want to vote for Hagel, don't vote for him. But for gosh sake, this should not turn into a filibuster opportunity.
Congressman La Tourette, I just wanted to ask you about your opinion on this, because Benghazi and Hagel, are they related issues or are they completely disparate?
No, they're separate issues. And this is one of the things that drives me nuts about the Congress and Washington in general. I think the President of the United States should get to have his team in place. And it's advice and consent. And it so drove me crazy when the Democrats did this to George W. Bush. It drives me crazy when the Republicans do it to President Obama. Unless there's some serious deficiency in the nominee, the president should get to put his team together. But having said that, Benghazi is, I don't know what happened in Benghazi, and it certainly is there's some conflicting stories. And I believe what Senator Graham is saying is that if the White House would just turn over what they know about Benghazi, Hagel's a walk in the park. And sometimes there are pressure points. I mean, just like sequestration is a pressure point. If the administration is just going to thumb their nose at the United States Senate and said, "We're not going to tell you what happens in Benghazi," this becomes the only tool that they have to get the president's attention. But at the end of the day, If the president wants Chuck Hagel, Chuck Hagel should be the Secretary of Defense.
Some Republicans say they just want to question him more, and there's a deal. They say that they will finally approve him, but the question remains, and the issue remains, the longer that issue, that nomination is out there, drip, 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 the longer there's a chance for, I'm being told, somebody to come up and question him more and slow it down even more. Okay. Let's go back to the phones briefly here. We have Lynn in College Park. Lynn, you're on the air on WTOP. Well, maybe we don't have Lynn.
Lynn, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, I'm supposed to ask the question now. Okay. The question basically was, if Congress made the sequester in order to prevent them from not getting a deal in that super committee, and now we're all freaked out about the sequester, then what is there for Congress to punish themselves with?
Senator Warner?
Well, the whole point here is not kind of punish, not punish. The point is, how do we bring down that $16.5 trillion debt? The minimum we need to do is $4 trillion over this next 10 years. The good news is, since we're the world's largest economy, we don't have to fix the whole thing overnight, and we've got to phase in some of these cuts so we don't overdo austerity the way you've seen in Greece and Spain and countries that even put us further into recession. So we've done, let's give the president benefit of the doubt, $2.5 trillion. We've got $1.5 trillion or more to do. Sequester was one approach. There are smarter ways to get to that $1.5 trillion than this kind of across the board, indiscriminate, not even look at where we get value or not approach to cuts. I believe it needs to be more revenues. It needs to be targeted cuts. It needs to be entitlement reform, the three legs of the stool. And my hope is I and others are going to keep pushing that.
We'll get to Congressman LaTourette's answer in just a minute, but there's an interesting question coming up here from Dave in Washington, D.C., and Congressman LaTourette answer it. Dave, go ahead quickly.
Yes, gentlemen, just wondering, what would be the best way for members of the public, the electorate, to communicate to our lawmakers like you that it's okay to compromise, it's okay to give in on taxes on one side, or okay to give in on entitlements on the other side, or in fact to demand that? What would resonate with you that would make you say, okay, I'm going to suck it up and compromise and find a solution?
Well, thanks for the phone call. And basically, I quit because I couldn't figure that out. Mm-hmm. And I'm labeled as a rhino within my party because I don't think compromise is a bad word and working together is a bad term. But, Dave McConnell and I were talking before we went on air. The redistricting is really at the root of the problem, not in the Senate, but in the House. And so you have these people in bright red districts or bright blue districts, and they have nothing to fear in the November elections. I mean, the expression that we used to use, it's a little off color, but unless you're caught with a dead girl or a live sheep, you're going to be reelected in November. And so it's the challenge in the primaries that is the problem. And if you're a Republican,
spoken like a former member.
Oh, believe me, I'm unchained.
You
I can say whatever
say that.
I want.
Right.
No pay, no nothing. But
bring it on.
But the deal is that the biggest challenge to a Democrat is somebody running from their left, and the biggest Republican challenge to a Republican is somebody running from their right. So to answer Dave's question, you got to get at redistricting and make people actually responsive to your vote.
Quickly before short, traffic and
short,
weather.
And the short answer I'd say is when we came out with our Gang of Six plan, we got grief from both sides. I think we need to hear your voice because, what we normally hear is don't touch my taxes, don't touch my Medicare, and then say, fix it. Individuals need to get out of their own political foxholes. This will get folks mad. If you're a Democrat, go support a Republican who's willing to do revenues. If you're a Republican, go support a Democrat who's willing to do entitlement reform. Until we can do that kind of reinforcing mechanism, you're going to have people playing red shirt, blue shirt.
All right. We're out of time on Ask the Lawmakers. Thank you so much to all our guests for coming in today. Democratic Senator Mark Warner and Congressman LaTourette, we appreciate it. WTOP's Dave McConnell as well.